This is Jack Shelley, broadcasting from the communication ship Ancon, lying off the Yokosuka Naval Base, Tokyo Bay, Japan. The first day of the formal occupation of Japan by Allied troops has become history, and I'm making this broadcast after spending most of that day with the veteran 4th Marine Regiment of the 6th Marine Division, who took over the Yokosuka Base. From the observations made with them, two things are clear. The Japanese are taking this occupation in surprisingly calm fashion. There's been no trouble so far, and on the basis of the reactions in the area where we landed, there doesn't seem to be any reason to expect there will be difficulty. And secondly, the food situation in Japan has become acute. So that, as one Japanese Navy warrant officer told us, the people are thinking so much about where they're going to get something to eat that they don't have time to worry about the fact that foreign troops have occupied their homeland for the first time in modern history. Our landing Thursday morning, Japan time, certainly must have been one of the strangest amphibious operations in the annals of warfare. We clambered into the Higgins boats from our transports, which is steamed into Tokyo Bay during the early hours of the morning. Some 5,000 Marines with full battle equipment bound for the great Yokosuka base. We sailed in the water for almost an hour and then headed for the beach. My boat, loaded with men from the 1st Battalion of the 4th Regiment, was in the first wave to go ashore, and we hit the beach at 9:30, half an hour earlier than the original schedule. Scores of American planes roared overhead, and except for the lack of shore bombardment, the operation up to that point looked very much like all the many other amphibious landings the Marines have made in the long Pacific War. But from the moment we hit the beach, and the end gate of the landing craft banged down to allow us to dash through the shallow surf, the resemblance ended. Ahead of us were the hangars of the Naval Air Station, which we were to occupy. And in front of them, ready to receive us, were about 100 Japs in uniform, with white armbands around their sleeves. All other personnel had been cleared out of the area, but these who stayed behind couldn't seem to do enough to cooperate. They smiled frequently, saluted practically everybody, and even drove some of us on a conducted sightseeing tour of the place in the cars they had lined up beside the hangars. Many of them spoke English, and all were eager to talk. Almost everyone you spoke to agreed that two things caused Japan to decide to call it quits: the new atomic bomb and the Russian declaration of war. Personal opinions were about evenly divided on which had the greater effect. But the news, held up for a long time by the closely censored Japanese press, that 90% of Hiroshima had been destroyed by the single atomic bomb dropped on that city, had caused a tremendous impression on the public. A little Japanese Navy officer, a former pilot who spoke English well, talked cheerfully to anyone who approached him. He had studied aviation engineering at Rensselaer Tech in New York, said he'd learned a great deal of interest there. He said you could see in the faces of Japanese on streetcars and trains their relief that the war is over. We have been fighting, he pointed out, for 12 years, counting the Manchurian affair. There's very little food for civilians, he added, with a shortage of rice and hardly any meat or fish except for the military. He said the chief worry of Jap civilians about the Allied occupation was that the Americans might take what food they had away from them. But he was careful to tell us, he assured his fellow Japanese, that he'd been in America. He knew what we were, and that we wouldn't do a thing like that. All the Japs you meet are very polite about America now. It seems to be as hard to find a Jap who hates Americans as it was to find a German who ever had anything to do with the Nazis after we defeated them. We watched the American flag raised to the mast before the Air Base Administration building, and then went out to the 33,000-ton Jap battleship Nagato, lying just offshore. The Nagato, the last battleship in the Jap Navy, was severely damaged about a month ago by three direct bomb hits from carrier planes of Admiral Halsey's 3rd Fleet. But she was still afloat, and about a dozen Japs were on her when the American auxiliary destroyer Bass had a party aboard her about 8 o'clock Thursday morning. A prize crew from the battleship South Dakota was also put aboard later, and the Blue Jackets were trying to get steam up, her boilers were still intact, and see if they could get the Jap vessel underway. Her superstructure was a mess. She'd burned furiously around the bridge after the bombs hit, and a sailor commented the Nagato was a firecraft compared to American battleships because so much wood was used in various parts of her. We went back to shore and stopped at the main naval base, already swarming with Marines and with bulldozers and other heavy equipment being put ashore. We drove through part of the city of Yokosuka, and not a civilian was in sight, except for uniformed police who had been left there with our permission to keep order if any difficulty arose. The Japs have now labeled these police the Peace Conservation Corps. I noticed when I called back later, however, there were a few civilians out watching the American vehicles roll by then. Most of them were children, too curious to keep from watching the show. At the headquarters building for the whole naval base, Admirals Nimitz and Halsey had already arrived and were setting out on a tour of the area. In a hastily organized press room, two smiling Jap newspaper men soon appeared, with press armbands on their sleeves, and announced they could speak English freely and would be glad to help. It turned out that Dome, the Japanese news agency, had covered the landings with their own reporters and cameramen. One of the Jap newsmen, he'd gone to college in America too, in California, said about a dozen persons had committed suicide in front of the Emperor's palace because Japan had surrendered, and a number of others had committed harakiri elsewhere. But they were mostly heads of patriotic societies, he said blandly, people who had said many bitter things against America. Then the newsman begged us to bring him some American magazines if we had any. He hadn't seen them for so long. He said so far as he knew, there had been no Nazis arriving in Japan after Germany's defeat. He estimated 660,000 people were killed in Japan by air raids, and 10 million were left homeless. He said things were very quiet and orderly in Tokyo, but there are no stores open because so much of that city has been destroyed. Food is distributed by the authorities there, he added, and you'll probably have to wait a couple of months even to be able to buy a postcard in the Japanese capital. There won't be any trouble or demonstrations against the American troops, he assured us. People know they can't do anything now. Yes, all the Japanese we've met have been very polite. And we were pretty polite to them, too. But then, late today, we heard the stories of some of the men who got to talk to American prisoners of war released from Japanese camps in the last 48 hours. Those disgusting brutalities, the beatings and starvings our men suffered, remind us again how the Nips acted when they could do something. We are not feeling a bit sorry for the Japs, we who have landed on their homeland. This is Jack Shelley in Tokyo Bay, Japan. I return you to Des Moines.